90.1 FM would like to remind listeners that the following program is a repeat broadcast.
Actually, he's wrong. It's Bitcoover. Thank you so much for joining us out here on the first interview session of Bitcoover FM. I've got one of Vancouver's finest. You know him as Bryface. Brian Chan, a Vancouver resident and leader of the Vancouver Chip Music Society. We met at the Vancouver Retro Game Expo because I found out there was actually a society for chiptune, and it made me so happy, and it inspired me to actually get this project off the ground. So it's nice to have you here.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
And you can find Bryface's music, of which we'll be playing a little bit, SoundCloud.com/Bryface and Bryface.bandcamp.com.
That's right.
And if you're lucky enough to catch him in person occasionally, you might even see an album on an SD card.
Yes, it's something that I sell only at live events. People have told me to sell it on Bandcamp, but the real fact of the matter is I'm just too lazy to set it all up and figure out all the tax stuff that Bandcamp makes you do. So
they want to make sure everything's nice and squeaky clean.
Yep.
And I also remember you had a QR code on your sticker as well.
It doesn't work because I did too much Photoshop stuff on it. But it gives it a nice texture, which is, I was at the time, you know, I was happy with what that was. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
There's a very special event, which is why we're here, which is why we come together to rally the chip fans across Vancouver. The Vancouver Chip Music Society is hosting Chip Lab 000, the inaugural event. And that'll be this Saturday, so coming up in just a few days, starting at 6:30. And that's at Stylus Records, and you can find Stylus Records on 2nd Avenue in Vancouver. All of the information is up on both the Vancouver Chip Music Society Facebook page and the Bitcoover Facebook page, as well as eventbrite.ca,
yep,
which is where we can get tickets.
That's right, and we have a limited amount of tickets. And
they're going hot.
Yeah, they're only about like 30 or so because the space itself is not that huge. And we kind of intended it to be this way just because we really wanted to have a smaller, more intimate kind of event where that was a little bit more grassroots than what you might have been used to for our other, you know, chip shows. Those are very performance-oriented. This time we wanted to basically like have an excuse for people who dabble in chiptune to, or people who are like, you know, if they're interested in learning, we just wanted to have an environment that, where people could actually learn and not just like, you know, watch other people.
Exactly. More of the ability to dive into chiptune versus with your hands versus just your ears.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be equal parts, almost like a chip music appreciation like course that one might design at a university or something. So we'll wax poetic
one
about
day. Can you imagine chip you?
Oh, yeah, I mean, that would be great.
That'd be incredible.
You know, those things have actually existed in some form or another, like at other chip festivals around the world. Sometimes they have workshops there too. So that's the kind of environment that we want to replicate.
As far as I know, this is Vancouver's first hand-on chip event. I don't think any.
What do you mean by that?
Like, and by that I mean where people can cut. I remember hearing one thing that was slightly similar, and it was how to build a very simple Arduino synthesizer.
Right.
But this is for people who are unfamiliar with chiptune, and as far as I know, this is the first time that this city has had an event specifically to allow people to get tangible with chiptune.
Yes, to my recollection, I think there aren't any events that talk about, you know, what it actually is. I mean, usually if people have a very oblique idea of what it is, and usually that that involves some sort of like video game reference. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the things that that I feel like is important is to actually step away from those from that low hanging fruit a little bit, mm-hmm, right? Because the way that I picture chip music is that it's something that actually has nothing to do with video games. I feel like it's music that can be appreciated by its own merits.
Oh, yeah.
And as a kind of subgenre of electronic music rather than something that's like, oh, hey, you know, remember Mario? Well, check this out, right? So we want to try and step away from that a little bit. Just to kind of refresh people's ideas of what it is and what it could be in the future.
Exactly. While a lot of this music may have started on video game soundtracks or in the arcade, those are just limitations. And one thing that I love about chiptune that drew me to it was the fact that you needed either modded hardware or modded software from the going to get started in chiptune. And so you actually had that do-it-yourself element kind of built into the culture.
Yeah, I think speaking on a deeper level, it has more to do with subverting the original purpose of a device, right? Trying to wrestle control away from, you know, whatever Nintendo had deemed is appropriate usage of a Nintendo or a Game Boy, and actually, like, you know, imposing a bit of your own will on it in a way. There's that sense of control, almost like there's almost an alchemy to it that I think is part of the draw for a lot of people, at least a lot of the artists that I'm friends with. So
one of the first times I got into composition in chiptune was with an emulator with a copy of Nanoloop. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit more forward than some of the other Game Boy and DMG Game Boys. It was released for the GBA, so it had a lot more sound potential and sample size was a lot bigger. And seeing what you could do just on a Game Boy Advance, mm-hmm. A light went off in my head. Like, I've got to get into this. I've got to find out more. And also keygen music and tracker music.
Yeah. The way I like to think about it is sometimes I like to imagine a world in which musical instruments didn't exist, but music did. And so if you think about that, I mean, it's a bit of like a one-hand clapping kind of question, right? But you know, if you were to really, like, seriously think about that, like, what would music sound like if you didn't have the benefit of whatever you think a piano is supposed to sound like?
We have so much of a conditioning in society as music should be this. Music should come from this. Music should only be made on this.
Yeah. And so, like, when you peel all those layers away, what you get is, like I'm drawn to the purity of the result of that, right? So if you have a piece of music and it was not played with, like a piano or a violin instrument, like, what do you have left? Then you probably just have, like, a series of pure tones, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you take that all away, you kind of distill a piece of music down to, like, okay, what is it in terms of a composition that makes it compelling? You know, and I think it starts to
get into things like melody and scale.
Yeah, and it means a lot more nowadays, now that I think, you know, like, a lot of bedroom producers, they're able to take shortcuts, and, you know, if you download the coolest, like, sound packs for Ableton or something like that, it's very easy to just make something that sounds like modern or something like that. But if you were to take that away, I feel like there's another inherent challenge there in trying to make music sound compelling and moving.
Something, you know, without, that grabs you.
Yeah, without the, you know, you're kind of tying your hands behind your back, but I feel like that's an even greater challenge, that if you can still make people feel something with the music, like, that to me represents the ideal of what chip music is. Like, when you take all the stylistic stuff away, it's like, as a piece of music, what's the core of it? Like, how does it affect a human? And so, I mean, that's what I like about it personally. I can't speak for other people, but it's how I like to think about it.
Beautiful. The aesthetics of chip music. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with it, come on by. Come see what happens. It's made on hardware that is typically slightly outdated, because it presented a challenge for musical composition. And I didn't start out in technology or computers. I started out in classical music.
Mm-hmm.
And so learning on the piano, learning scales and harmony and theory, it was drilled into my brain. And when I came upon keygen music and tracker and chiptune, it clicked, because you can tell right away that it's very easy to make a track.
Yeah.
But how much emotion can you draw with, you know, four channels?
Right, exactly. And you, if you think about, like, the limitations that even, like, composers like Bach had, you know, at their disposal at the time, which was like, okay, well, if you have a piano in front of you,
you've got pretty much,
and you have, like, you know, so only so many fingers to play notes with, you know, how do you like it, you know, impart some of your own personality in the music? And so, like, in his case, it was like, it was a lot of kind of things that sounded kind of simultaneous, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of, like, arpeggios, lots
counterpoints.
All these things that, when put together, it, like, oh, it's a piece of music
that's complex.
It's the sum of, it's more than the sum of its parts.
Exactly.
Right? So, yeah.
And one, could you go through, maybe for the folks at home, some of the tools that you use to compose music on?
Yeah. Well, I suppose the most common and the most popular tool is that, the 1980s Game Boy that most people have, that's kind of sitting in their closet.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference here is that instead of inserting a game cartridge to play a game, that cartridge is loaded with some kind of custom software that allows you to write music right on the machine. And so typically, like, the tool that most chip musicians use for the Game Boy, at least, is Little Sound DJ, which is a piece of software developed by a guy named Johan Kutlinski. He's based in Finland.
Big ups.
He felt like, I guess one day he wanted to build a piece of software that allowed that kind of unprecedented control over the Game Boy's sound hardware. And he wrote this back in, like, I think the early 2000s. And then with a few key people, it caught on, and that's how the story goes.
We have, in essence, it's a miniaturization of a tracker software, and I describe tracker softwares as Excel spreadsheets with music data in hexadecimal.
Yeah, it's basically like a bunch of steps of, you know, like a series of instructions that tells a sound chip, you know, what to play, what sounds to play, when, how high, how low, that sort of thing.
They're, in essence, controlling four, in the Game Boy's case, four small synthesizers, and you've got three waves and a pulse, right?
Yeah.
And there's also a noise.
There's two what's called a pulse wave or square wave channels, which basically output very, like, rectangular waves. Then you have a wave channel that basically, like, scrubs over, like, a small wave table of wave data that you can load with anything, whether it's a sample or, like a periodic waveform. And there's a noise channel that outputs different kinds of, like, randomly fed noise, but in different, like, timbres. So you can have, like, a very, like, low, like, very low frequency kind of, right? Or, like, have a really high frequency noise, like, like something like that. So
the LSDJ is a popular tool. Further along in the generation, we've got the Game Boy Advance having Nanoloop. And Nanoloop 1, actually, I think, was originally for GBC or DMG.
The original version of that software was for the Game Boy, the original Game Boy.
The DMG 01.
And, a lot of people took to it as well, particularly those who maybe weren't as musically inclined, because the interface was, like, it didn't care if you... It was, like, it was a very abstract interface, very visual. You didn't have to know what a note particularly was. All you had to do was just trying to, you know, write some pattern and hope that the result is music.
It was almost kind of it's very similar to a piece of software called Max MSP, and that's I don't know if you've
seen somewhat
Max.
Yeah,
it, in the sense of that it likes to abstract having to know about pitch placement in favor of visual programming.
Right.
And then you work more with shapes, and then it's a very interesting way to go about composition.
Yeah, it's infuriating for the first, like, hour, and I can attest to this, because I just picked up a copy myself for the Game Boy Advance just to play around with, and Yeah, like it's very different from what you expect a piece of music software is. But once you develop a mental model of it in your mind, you're like, oh yeah, I can see how people can write music very quickly and in a very freeing way that takes them outside the bounds of what, you know, like typical music theory is, right?
So and then it becomes less and less, oh, you did this on a Game Boy, and wow, I had no idea this could be done.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's the general goal of chip music, too. Like, I mean, it's not a necessary goal, but I think it's essential for great chip music. Like, I've found that the common element is this idea of, wow, like, I had no idea that, you know, this piece of hardware was capable of this kind of sound. Mm-hmm. And so, basically, every, you know, important chip release that's been released over the years, it has that element of like innovation, and it's all the more impressive when you realize how limited the sound palette is, right? Mm-hmm. People figure out cooler ways to write stuff that sounds more modern, and just different ways of leveraging the hardware to do stuff it was never intended to do.
Mm-hmm. Things like binaural beats and all that good stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful. Not just portable hardware. You also write for standalone, I guess, consoles as well. You have a few tracks on a Famicom, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. The general idea of using a piece of hardware as a chip platform, like a lot of the parts are pretty common between platforms. It basically involves the hardware itself and some kind of cartridge or media with custom software, right? In this case, it's a little bit different. There's a program called FamiTracker that actually exists for Windows platforms that you can write music that is playable on an NES. And the way that makes it possible is that they emulate the sound hardware within the program.
Like the Ricoh chip, the 2A?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They have at least some facsimile such that you can get a pretty reasonable facsimile of the sounds that you're going to get. And then the program, you can play it like right inside the program, or you can export what's called an NSF file, which is basically
Nintendo
like
sound.
Yeah,
file.
I mean, it's not an official sound platform from Nintendo's point of view, but it's just a representation of the bytecode that one would incorporate into the ROM chip of a Nintendo cartridge. And so you'd pop that into, there's a couple different carts for this. One, a popular one is the Power Pack. Mm-hmm. So you can like load these NSF files on a compact flash card, put that card into a slot into this cart, and then let her rip.
Nice.
The one that I have is actually a very custom cartridge from Japan. That is, you basically load an SD card full of these NSF files. You put it in, and you actually use hardware controls directly on the cartridge to load the music and advance to the next one. So
nice.
Yeah, a lot of different approaches.
I'd be interested in checking out the Japanese cartridge.
Well, I'll probably bring it this weekend. Sweet. Just to show people that these things actually exist and there is some kind of, you know, demand for them.
I'm planning to hop on that open mic as well. If any of you are listening, for those of you who are interested, the open mic is sign upable as well.
Yeah. The reason that we have an open mic at all is that this is a bit of a reaction to just various other chip shows that I've seen around the world, been a part of. I think the ones that are more successful tend to be a lot more inviting of like new or potential talent, or at least even if there is no talent, to provide those opportunities for people to learn. And so the open mic is a way for us to basically try and get people out of the woodwork. We've actually because we've adopted this model, we've met some people that we had no idea lived in Vancouver, but they do this in their bedroom, and then they in turn had no idea that we existed, right?
Beautiful.
So it's like it's a very like mutual kind of again,
it was
very
similar
grassroots
to Vancouver and Van Chip Music. That first time we were kind of like, wait, what?
Someone
else is doing this, someone else digs it too.
Yeah, basically it's the version of, you know, if you build it they will come, right?
Exactly.
Or if nobody comes, then at least you'll know, right?
Uh-huh.
And then you can stop doing it. But thankfully for us, we've we've met like some people that we've never expected to meet along the way. So and now they, you know, help us out in different ways in our various events. And so yeah, it's really cool. Like the thing that I've only witnessed from afar in places like New York or Tokyo is like, I was asking myself for years, just like, oh, I wonder if Vancouver could ever have some kind of analog of that, right? But sometimes you just gotta dive in and, you know, hold an event and hope that people come out.
And people came out.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that the second event I came to, it was stellar. It was rocking. Yeah, we just had a third one a little while ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Fourth in the works?
Yes, right. So far we've had about a 6-month cadence in between events.
Nice, so we're thinking summer again?
Yeah, and you know, like... We know that other cities tend to, like some of the mecca, like cities of chiptune, they have these sorts of events every like month, but it's only because they have that much of a critical mass of artists. And so for us, we feel like 6 months is an appropriate amount for us to not only like regroup and prepare for the next show, but to actually like spend time trying to figure out what to do next, right?
Exactly.
So,
and because we're building this up from the ground up, it takes everybody.
Yeah, we found that involving more people has definitely done us. It's been really beneficial for us, partly because I've seen, you know, like chip scenes where that sort of egalitarian attitude was not as prominent, and you know, I would say I'm probably one of the most like active, you know, ambassadors of chiptune, but I don't want to own it because, well, partly I don't want that responsibility, and I want to see what other people want to do with that. And so it's been really gratifying to see that other people are not like, I don't get the sense that other people are forced into liking it. They understand what it's all about, and they want to get involved in within it too. And I think that's how these scenes form. So I'm glad to see that that's happening. And so, yeah, it's been a blast.
Not only will people be able to mess with some audio, people will also get some glitchy visuals from VJ Base 64.
Yeah, so McKendry's been great. We actually met her at the first Overflow show, and like she was like, we met her because she was like the girlfriend of one of our open mic performers,
Unico.
Yeah, that's right. Who played an awesome set, the most recent one, by the way,
the Pocket Operator.
And so yeah, like I was just chatting with her, and she was like, hey, you know, like I do visuals too. And at the time, I was like, oh yeah, you do you? And then I looked at her work, and I'm like,
she does.
Where have you been all of our lives?
One of those Vancouver hidden gems.
Yeah, so that was an example of like just stumbling across very like relevant talent and just wanting to involve them as much as possible too, right? So she's been she did visuals for the second show, and
and we've also got Freaky DNA Leonard, who if y'all know about what is it, Road City Rampage.
Retro City Rampage.
Excuse me, Leonard.
Come on.
I'll apologize in person.
You will.
I will.
Yeah.
And last time I saw him live, which was at that third Overflow, he was controlling things using a PlayStation controller for his effects.
Yeah, his setup is a little bit different too. Like, he doesn't use Famitracker for his NES-based stuff. What he does, it's an approach that he adopted from one of our other guys, Noren Red, who's somewhat of a legend in chip circles himself.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is they sample individual bits and pieces from an actual NES. And then they do the meticulous work of preparing the samples for use in a program called OpenMPT, which is a tracker, you know, like it's a pretty run-of-the-mill tracker software. Yeah. And then they just plot the notes there, and then sample specific sounds and order them in a particular way, and that's how they get music.
Nice.
So, but this time it's going to be completely different. Like, you know, like Leonard's actually a super veteran like composer in many different genres, different platforms.
I see Pure Data on there, so I know I'm going to have to talk to him about visual programming.
Yeah, so Pure Data is kind of like a contemporary of Max MSP, which is one of these
they just studied this at UVic. Shout out to UVic. Their Max MSP is the commercialized version, and it used to be just Max. And this was written by Miller Puckett.
Right.
And it's what it does is it allows you to basically build any kind of sound synthesis or sound engine from scratch, but just using visual programming languages. And Pure Data is the free open source version that anybody can download, anybody can update.
Yeah, but you basically take these little blocks of functionality and just wire them up. But they end up being some really sprawling projects. But it turns out that, Leonard's a pro at this. And so what he did was he was tasked to do music for this this documentary called Beep. Which is basically like chronicles the history of game sound. And so what he did for that was actually build these massive Pure Data projects that are controlled. Like they'll never play the same.
Aleatoric.
Okay, yeah, I think that's what it's called.
Aleatoric means that it is never the same twice, and the composition or the system itself has an element of chance or randomness built into it.
Right, and to the degree that he's able to kind of control the inputs a little bit, his whole plan is to guide the performance a little bit, but let basically the whole project run of its own accord. And we're going to see that projected onto screen.
Oh, yes.
And when you see all those like little bits and pieces like, you know, wiggling around and all these like grid systems like interacting with one another, and you can see how the music forms from
To see what his connection between audio and visual is, like what language or what scripts he's using to connect that.
Yeah. So this is one of the examples of like this, you know, it's debatable whether or not this is chip music.
Is this chip music? That's a big question I ask myself weekly. And when I'm formulating the playlist for the show, does this count as chiptune?
You know, I think that when people ask that question on forums or whatever, I feel like that's almost the wrong question to ask. I think the proper question to ask is this person chiptune? Which kind of sounds weird too, but you know, I always feel like even more important than how the music sounds, does the artist embody the processes that are common to chiptune, right? Like, does he or she have the certain DIY, you know, approach to things? Is there a certain
diligence
attention
to getting your hands dirty?
Yeah, is there a attention to detail? You know, that sort of a thing. And that to me is like, that's why I go to shows, is to like hang out with people who have that kind of mentality. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
For those of you, once more, we're going to just tell you where you can find Chip Labs. It will be at Stylus Records. This is on 2nd Avenue. It looks like 291's East 2nd Avenue in Vancouver. What is it right next to?
I forget, actually, but I paid a visit there earlier this last week. And it's actually in the alleyway between 1st and 2nd Avenue, so that's something you'll keep in mind.
This is very close to... this is a few blocks down from the SkyTrain station.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a reason we picked that
The lab.
Area.
Okay, the lab. Okay, if people know where the lab is a photo print shop in town.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Yep. Yeah. 2nd Avenue, looks like East 2nd Avenue and Scotia Street. By the way, all this information is on Facebook. Chip Labs will be starting at 6:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. And looks like we'll go workshops and then a round table of the open mics, and then we finish it off with some live music.
Yeah, actually, as a matter of fact, I think we'll leave the open mic and jam to the end, because we don't know exactly how that's going to turn out.
How many people?
And, you know, at best, we'll see a bunch of people kind of pass the input around and just play a bunch of stuff and keep rotating. Or if there's like a lack of these sorts of people, then it'll just be a time for us to have everybody look at everything on the table, ask questions.
Why not?
Hang around, order a couple of beers. Oh, it is all ages, by the way. So
all ages.
Not everyone can order a beer.
Yes.
We'll keep our eyes
19 plus for beer.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Bryface. It's a pleasure to have you, and I'm sure we'll have you on board once more. Shout out, follow Bryface across various forms of social media. You can find most of his music on soundcloud.com/Bryface. Bryface.bandcamp.com is where you can purchase some of the beautiful albums like...
I got Various Topics.
Yes,
that's my...
I love that one.
Most recent Game Boy album. I also wrote an album for the Korg DS10, which is basically like a, I guess you could call it an emulation of the MS-10 synthesizer, but like in the form of a DS cartridge. So, so I wrote a bunch of, I wrote an album full of tracks for that.
How to Dodge Lasers.
Yes, that's right.
I was like, oh, I gotta remember. You can find all that music on Bandcamp. And if you want to find more information about this event, you can check out the Vancouver Chip Music Society page, facebook.com/vanchipmusic. And that's also their Instagram as well, at vanchipmusic. Bryface, thank you so much for being here. We'll catch you again.
Thank you.